Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben DuBose. And well, folks, happy NBA Day. After 3-plus months of no basketball, well, we did have preseason basketball, but folks, that comes with an asterisk. As of today, the NBA is back in full swing. It's the regular season opener, ring night in Oakland for the Warriors against probably their biggest competition, your Houston Rockets. Game starts at 9:30 Central Time tonight on TNT, so to preview that game, but also the season as a whole, because of course, you're not going to learn anything too in-depth from one particular game. At the end of the day, it's one game in October out of 82. But this is the start of the season, a very highly anticipated season here in Houston with Chris Paul and James Harden playing together and leading this team, probably the only team other than the Warriors to have two top 10 players. So to break down not just the matchup, but the Rockets, the season as a whole, the chase of the Warriors, a whole litany of issues when it comes to the 2017-2018 Rockets. This is our preview show, and so I've got a special guest to help me break all of it down. It's Kelly Scaletta. I've had him on the show before. He's a columnist for Bleacher Report, FanRag, a number of other outlets covering the NBA as a whole, but based here in Texas, he certainly covers the Houston Rockets fairly intently. And in addition to all of his normal work, this past weekend, he had an exclusive with Mike D'Antoni. It's one of Bleacher Report's lead stories on their website. I tweeted it out yesterday, but if you haven't already, you can find it on Kelly's Twitter page at Kelly Scaletta or at BleacherReport.com. It's called Who Will Be Houston's Alpha Point Guard? Whoever has the ball. And the column, of course, it's about the integration of Chris Paul and James Harden, which is certainly the biggest theme for the Rockets, not just tonight, but for the season as a whole. So first things first to go through it. Kelly, welcome back to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty well. I'll lead with just the obvious. I'm assuming this is a pretty cool get for you, because to write this column, and it's part of your season preview package for the Rockets, you got an exclusive with Mike D'Antoni. So I'm just curious, you know, A, that's got to be a pretty cool moment for you as a journalist, and B, before we get into the particulars, what the vibe was. Because to me, what you see from your piece and a few others that Mike D'Antoni has done interviews on, there just seems to be a certain quiet confidence that this thing is going to work. And certainly they had a positive preseason. They went 4-1, and they opened the regular season tonight against the Warriors. But there's certainly some questions out there. How are Chris Paul and James Harden, two ball-dominant guards, going to mesh? But from all the interviews that we've seen, and certainly yours at BleacherReport.com is among them, there seems to be a certain confidence from D'Antoni, folks around the Rockets, that they're going to find a way to make this work.
Yeah. So just getting the interview was pretty awesome. I had already pitched the article to Bleacher Report without the interview. And then just some things happened that allowed me to get that exclusive. And then the course of the interview, it was really amazing because so much of what I planned on writing just really corresponded with the answers he was giving. So it really worked well to just kind of weave those two things in together. So yeah, that was kind of neat. And the thing is about that, you know, I think sometimes with interviews, you can't quite catch the tone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you can't catch somebody's tone of voice in an interview always.
Right.
And D'Antoni was so, like, ebullient, almost. Mm. Like, so enthusiastic. It's hard to capture just how excited he is about this. Like, if you're an NBA coach, having two Hall of Fame point guards, that you have to learn, figure out how to juggle together. There are worse problems to have.
Yes.
You know, he's just, and especially when you're arguably the greatest point guard coach of all time, where you know, that's like always been your thing, you know.
Yes.
It's hard to envision like D'Antoni trying to figure out, oh gosh, how am I going to do this? And he talked a lot about, I mean, they're experimenting, they're trying different things, they're having fun with it, and I think the first and most important part that he really emphasized with me and in some other interviews is that these guys wanted it.
Yes.
Harden and Paul wanted to play together, and you know, he said if they're getting thrust together, then it's going to be difficult because you're asking them to sacrifice numbers or a sacrifice in playing time, and there's going to be a competition. But since they wanted to play together, neither one is feeling like they're going to sacrifice anything. They both just want to win. And so, and they've both kind of had this situation the last several years where they haven't had another ball handler.
Yep.
That can help them, you know, with their, with the responsibilities. And they bear so much, and then they both bear all the blame when their team loses in the playoffs. So, yeah, I think it makes a big difference here.
Yeah, I certainly took that from your piece, and he's made the analogy before to the Olympic team, which you have a lot of ball-dominant guys in these Olympic teams, but it doesn't matter because they want it to work. And in this case, Chris and James, Chris certainly had other options, and so did James, for that matter, in terms of recruiting. So, yes, they want to make it work, and that's the biggest initial step. Another thing, and I want to go into particular some of the quotes that he gave you. One thing that really jumped out to me, and I think a lot of Rockets fans are underselling, is this quote that 28 minutes, they're going to be on the floor by themselves. Because so much has been focused this offseason about, okay, how are these guys going to fit together? Well, honestly, over at least half the game, they're going to be out there individually. I think where the Rockets are really going to have the biggest bonus in terms of their production, their efficiency, however you want to put it, is that, as D'Antoni has said, you're going to have one of those guys on the floor for all 48 minutes of the game. So that means, hypothetically, the 14 minutes that each sits, or perhaps maybe Paul sits 16 minutes, Harden 12, just because Harden's younger. But either way, let's say 14 minutes a game on average each sits, then you're going to have the other one out there. So it's sort of weird. Like, I think a lot of NBA analysis gets bogged down into, okay, what play is it going to be in the final 2 minutes of a close game? But the reality, if you're the Rockets, it's not just about that. Part of why this is such a big deal for the Rockets is that ideally you should be able to put teams away earlier because you're not going to have that lull that we saw the Rockets have a lot of games last year, particularly in the playoffs, when those 12 to 14 minutes a game that Harden doesn't play, then all of a sudden you have no guy who can lead the offense. So I think it was very noteworthy that kind of D'Antoni went out of his way to point that out, because I think a lot of NBA fans just kind of like to look at, okay, where's the offense going to come from in the last 2 minutes of a close game? And the reality, the goal for the Rockets isn't to have the most efficient two-minute offense. The goal for the Rockets is to outscore teams over 48 minutes. And so if you could discuss that angle of it, and because I thought D'Antoni's responses were pretty on point there.
Right, and that I think that was really an impressive point too, that there's always going to be a Hall of Fame point guard on the court. That's just unless the game is out of hand, unless you know the minutes are meaningful, there's going to be a Hall of Fame point guard on the court, and that means there's no chance for the defense to get a breath. You know, when Russell Westbrook sets, you know, there's a chance for the other team to kind of make a little comeback or something like that. But now there's just, when do you make your move against the Rockets? There's always going to be this Hall of Fame caliber point guard on the court, and that's just, it's the steady pressure, I think, that is going to make a difference. That's going to wear on teams in the fourth quarter. They haven't had a chance to catch a breath. And so, I like you. I think a lot of the times, the games won't matter in the last 2 minutes. So who has the ball in the last 2 minutes? It's not going to be either one of them.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to be on the court with 2 minutes left. So anyway, the other thing, I don't know if this was one of the that's related to that I thought was really insightful is this thought that D'Antoni brought up that there's the pressure that goes with carrying the onus of the offense.
Yes, yes. And that leads completely into what my next question was going to be, that discussion of pace. Because you hear a lot about, okay, how is this going to work about Chris Paul, who traditionally is a walk-it-up point guard with the high pace that D'Antoni wants to play with. But I thought D'Antoni had some really good points there. And, of course, this correlates with when Chris is out there by himself or when he's out there with James. Either way, I think what you're getting at was the comment that D'Antoni made about not just physical fatigue, but mental fatigue from having to make every decision. And so by extension, if you don't have to make every single decision, then it's much easier to be sharper and probably play quicker and more efficient. Is that where you were going?
Yeah. And I never thought of it that way. Mm-hmm. That it's not just the physical burden, and then Harden, we lose sight of how much physical burden is on Harden.
Yeah.
People complain about all the fouls he draws, but all of those fouls, they take a toll. They take a physical toll. And so sharing the ball with Harden, he's going to have less physical toll on him. But there's also this whole mental toll of you need to make every decision while you're on the court. And so, one area I think is what, you mentioned D'Antoni brought up, which is pace, but I think you'll also see it affect Harden in turnovers.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll make as many mental mistakes where sometimes some of his passing turnovers or whatever are just, you can tell they're fatigue driven.
Sure.
And I think you'll see him improve on defense.
Yeah.
He gets a lot of slack for his defense, but when you're putting that much energy, you're carrying the offense almost literally by yourself. It's like the energy is finite, and both physical and mental, and so being able to distribute that and calibrate it a little differently because they're sharing the burden with one another. I think a lot of these answers about pace, about the Harden's defense, about the turnovers, those things will improve just because of being able to share the ball.
Yeah. And the other thing about pace in particular, people forget, but there was a question before last year of whether the Rockets could play with pace with Harden, because people had some of the same critiques about Harden in recent years they do about Chris Paul now. Well, he kind of walks it up, and I thought D'Antoni made a good point about the Rockets offense, which is that by and large, they're not calling plays. This is not the Princeton offense in which you have just a certain exquisite backdoor cut at a given time. Essentially, what the Rockets do 90% of the time, it's almost like a soccer style in that it's free flow and you're playing off what the defense gives you and essentially trying to speed the game up and then figure out where the inefficiency is defensively and take advantage of that. So that's another part of it, is that I feel like Chris Paul, a lot of systems in the NBA, and I would throw the Clippers with Doc Rivers into this, pride themselves on half-court execution. You go into a timeout and you call this play. Whereas the Rockets, they don't really do that. The Rockets play a somewhat unconventional style, a very free flow. And so I think that in and of itself helps to boost the pace. And I think it did with Harden last year as well. Because it's not like you're going out there and trying to execute X play most of the game. You're essentially just trying to figure out where the biggest inefficiency is defensively and take advantage of that as fast as you can. I mean, is that a reasonable assessment?
Yeah, I think that's perfectly reasonable. And, it ties into the whole 7 seconds or less kind of D'Antoni philosophy. Is you're trying to to do things where the defense is not settled.
Yes.
Or do things where the defense is, the defense naturally wants to go to a play. And so his view is use what the defense is trained to do against them. It's a counter, sort of a counterintuitive offense.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like one example he used, I don't know if I put this in the article, but when you're in transition, the traditional way of doing it was to try and go to the rim.
Yes.
So the defense naturally goes into the paint, right? So his view, put the wings out in the corners and nail corner threes instead of two-point, you know, instead of contested two-point shots at the rim, take an uncontested three-point shot in the wing. And so, you know, just go against where the defense naturally wants to go. So all of that just drives pace. It drives chaos, and chaos drives pace.
Yeah, and I think that's a good reason to buy into the idea that the pace is going to be faster, not just with James, because we saw that work just fine last year, but with Chris as well. There are just some inherent factors in the structure of that offense that I think are going to resolve a lot of those problems that a lot of people nationally have mentioned these past few months when discussing these two players. Now, you didn't talk that much in the article, because I know it's a preview for the Rockets in general, about the Warriors, but that's the obvious question, because not just tonight, the Rockets do open the season against the Warriors, but beyond tonight, because whatever happens, whether they win, lose, by whatever margin, it's one game out of 82, and it's in October. And honestly, the Rockets, with Chris and James, probably have more of an adjustment than the Warriors do, with the Warriors bringing back generally the same supporting cast. So I'm just curious how you think this plays in, the second point guard, to the Warriors matchup, where it helps the Rockets. And then secondly, you know, I know you're high on the Rockets, a lot of us are, but obviously they're not as talented as the Warriors. And so I'm just curious, in any particular game, it can be tonight, it can be in the potentially inevitable playoff matchup, where is the issue that the Rockets are going to come into, or what are they going to face against the Warriors? What's going to be their biggest challenge, besides the obvious that, you know, the Warriors have four top 25 players and maybe even three top 10 players?
Okay, so let's
start with the positive.
I actually talked to D'Antoni about the Warriors specifically.
Okay.
But it just, there wasn't any way to really work it into the article. But I asked him if he had any bittersweet feelings about the Warriors' success, because so much of what the Warriors do is derived from his philosophy. So, you know, it's kind of a vindication of his offense,
sure.
Right? But it's with the team that he's not coaching.
Yep.
So he's, you know, refused to take credit for the Warriors' offense. He said that some of it was based on what he did, but that there was a lot of other things incorporated into that that helped a lot. And he said he's a big fan of the Warriors. And how can you not be? I mean, it's purely entertaining basketball. But as a coach, he's like, how do you even beat these guys?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's just interesting. He does seem to have an admiration for the Warriors. And I think we haven't touched on Luke Mbamute,
yes,
or PJ Tucker getting, yep, added to the Warriors. And that was very much a specific targeted strategy to compete with the Warriors.
Yes.
They are not a tall team, but they're a long team. And they have all those combo forwards and wings that can guard two, three, four positions. And that's why they're so good. So I think that both Tucker and Mbamute are so good defensively. And especially Mbamute is arguably the best value signing of the entire offseason. And I think it puts the Rockets closer to the Warriors. I don't think that they can beat the Warriors in a seven-game series. Mm-hmm. But I do think that they can compete with the Warriors better than anybody else can. Because the two things that make the Warriors most successful are their, not just their three-point shooting, but their three-point shooting and their shooting at the rim.
Yes.
Their utilization of the Maury zone. And also their athletic wingy defense.
Yes.
Which can guard multiple positions. I think in those two areas, the Warriors are more able to compete with the Warriors than anyone else.
Yeah. And so if you want to take the final step, because certainly Chris Paul gets you a lot closer to where you have the ability to, you know, we talked about all 48 minutes. We discussed two top 10 players. They're the only team besides the Warriors that can say that. You mentioned it in your article. What's the next step to get there? Because I think what you're saying, you know, it's, you know, you didn't mention Ryan Anderson by name, but I think it goes without saying that you, you know, Tucker and Mbamute are big deals because it gives you more two-way players in terms of switching athleticism than Ryan Anderson at the four spot, which could have been a liability should the Rockets have played the Warriors in the playoffs last year. So you've added Tucker and Mbamute. You've got the defense. What's the next step? And it may not happen this year. It may take till next offseason. If you're going to actually challenge, and of course the Warriors are freakishly good, is it a matter of getting a third All-Star level playmaker? Is it a matter of maybe Clint Capella in terms of internal growth, making an even bigger leap than expected in terms of being an interior presence? What's the remaining gap, and what's the easiest way for the Rockets to fill that, be it as far as internal development or a future transaction?
Well, outside of getting Tanya Harding's ex-husband, you know,
yeah,
he does best.
I like that.
It's really hard to conceive of a way where they could like actually catch the word. I think it would require getting another superstar.
Gotcha.
Somehow. I don't know who that would be. Jimmy Butler type player, would be a nice fit there. I don't know that that's feasible or possible, but somebody that has that kind of mental toughness and all around game.
Yeah. And just for clarity, I think both of our followers on Twitter are aware, but that player is not and was not Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
I'm not even convinced that Carmelo Anthony would have been an upgrade over Ryan Anderson.
Yeah.
It's not like Carmelo Anthony is this defensive stopper or something like that.
Yeah.
And one thing I think that you know, like with Ryan Anderson, he made 140 shots from at least 28 feet last year.
Mm.
If I remember that, I think that's right. The next most by a power forward was 80.
Wow.
By Serge Ibaka. And when you're talking about stretching the court, it's not just about making three-point shots. It's about making those shots 2, 3, 4 feet behind the line.
Yes.
Because the defense has to extend out that far. So just like making corner threes is not the same thing as making these shots way behind the arc. And Carmelo Anthony, I think he made like 8 shots and was like 23% from 28 feet plus.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when you look at the offensive rating, of the Rockets, their offensive rating was best with Ryan Anderson on the court.
Yep.
Even more than James Harden, because he stretches the court so much. And obviously that doesn't mean he's the best offensive player or anything, but I think maybe some Rockets fans are so dour on his defense that they, and you know, frankly, his inconsistency.
Yeah, shooting at home.
But when he's hot, that offense is unstoppable.
Yep.
So, and I think the only realistic way you're going to beat the Warriors in a series is just with an incredible shooting performance for four games.
Yeah, and and to tie it back into your article, I like the fact that D'Antoni did not shy away from the, you know, the threes and layup style at all. In fact, he said point blank that he didn't view the offense as any problem at all last year. He blames it on the defense, and every emphasis we've seen from the Rockets is, you know, a top 10, even a top 5 defense. But to tie it into your piece, you know, a lot of folks asking about Chris Paul in the mid-range, and certainly Chris Paul has a mid-range shot. It'll be another tool in the toolbox, which is nice. At least makes the defense respect the space on the floor a little bit. But other than that, it's not a matter of having Chris Paul. Now all of a sudden the Rockets are going to go away from what works. No, the Rockets, when they're shooting well, they have an incredible ability to score, and that randomness from shooting so many threes is probably the only chance you have in terms of beating the Warriors. So I liked what we heard. I believe it was your article that D'Antoni said that he'd like to get Chris Paul to 6 threes a game instead of 3.
Right.
Yeah. So that was in your article. That was a big thing. And of course, you know, that means playing off the ball, but that was another thing you addressed, that, and another reason why I believe that the James Harden and Chris Paul pairing, that this can work, is there's just this silly narrative that because a player played a certain way last year, that's the only way that he can play. When in reality is, some of it's just situational. And in the case of Harden and Paul, we've seen Harden play off the ball. We've seen him do it in Oklahoma City quite well when he played with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. And with Chris Paul, this is a guy who is a quality catch-and-shoot player, a very good shooter. There's no reason to believe he can't shoot six threes a game at a very high percentage. So I think all of that ties into the same theme, which is, of course, the Rockets are going to be the same group they were last year in terms of philosophy. They're going to want to go out there and take a lot of threes, increase the randomness, because that's the best ticket there is to beating the Warriors. And who knows? You just have to hope that the stars align over the course of a playoff series. Well, that, and I guess that you have the defense to get past the Spurs or whoever the second round opponent is to face the Warriors in the first place, because that was the issue this past year. But philosophically, it doesn't sound like the Rockets are changing. And really, with how great the Warriors are, that randomness is probably the best way to do it, right?
Oh, yeah. And he literally laughed out loud when I asked him about that. And he did point out that, you know, the Chris Paul, he's the only player in the NBA that shot over 50% on 5 attempts between the semicircles last year.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the very few guys who is efficient from the mid-range. And so, he's one of the few guys D'Antoni would even allow to think about it.
Yeah.
But the 3-point shot is a better shot.
Yep.
And Chris Paul was 70% on catch and shoots. He had an effective field goal percentage of 70% last year on catch and shoot. That's insane. And then Harden was 60%.
Yep.
So it's not like these guys can't make shots off the pass. They can. And, you know, they just, because they didn't have another ball handler and distributor on the team, they just didn't do it as much. And, you know, we kept hearing about Carmelo Anthony over the last 3 years is almost 40% from three on catch and shoots, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I've seen this quoted in like 5 different articles and keep hearing it mentioned.
Yeah.
James Harden's actually made more shots at a higher rate than Anthony over the last 3 years.
Hmm.
So, but you know, we don't talk about can he play off the ball? Well, yes, he can. Just because he doesn't mean he can't.
Yep.
And when he was at Oklahoma City, 2/3 of his jump shots last season in Oklahoma City were catch and shoots.
Yep.
So, I think that whole narrative is just sort of silly.
Yep.
There's going to be some adjustment in terms of just like learning how to move off the screens and whatnot, but and there's been times where Chris Paul was just kind of camped out in the corner, and you're like, well, is that really the best way to use Chris Paul? But these are things that can be worked out.
Sure. I agree. Kelly, last question. We spent a lot of the podcast talking about, obviously, your article, one of the lead stories on BleacherReport.com, previewing the Rockets in the 2017-2018 season, also on your Twitter page, all that kind of stuff. And then the rest of it talking about the Warriors matchup, partially because they're the opening night opponent, also because, well, they're the team that the Rockets are trying to chase. I think those of us listening to the podcast, those of us in the Rockets community feel pretty good about the Rockets being the second best team in the West, probably the second best team in the NBA, if we want to be completely honest. But there's a lot of folks out there in the Twitterverse who feel differently. And one of the other articles you wrote in the past couple of weeks that I really enjoyed, it was right after the Carmelo Anthony trade to Oklahoma City, explaining why you viewed the Rockets, not the Thunder, as the number two. And I thought you had a lot of great points. I've mentioned it both on the podcast and Twitter before. But if you can, before you sign off, give me your cases. You know, we said why the Rockets aren't quite at the at the Warriors level, but give me your case why the Rockets are better than those other Western Conference contenders, specifically the Thunder, because I think your points on the gap, how much the Thunder have to close on the Rockets, I think there's a tendency on casual NBA fans to underestimate just how much separation there was between the Rockets and Thunder this past season. And of course, that's sort of the baseline you have to go on when it comes to projecting how a team's probably going to perform this year. So before we close out, discuss the Rockets, Thunder, and the Rockets versus the rest of the West hierarchy.
Yeah, so I don't remember exactly what the numbers were. But there's the actual record where do you remember how?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got it for you. Yeah, the Rockets were 55-27. Of course, they were the three seed. But the Thunder were 47-30. There was 8 games of separation in the standings, basically, last year. 55 versus 47. And then on top of that, you had the fact that head-to-head, the Rockets won 7 of the 9 meetings, including 4 or 5 in the playoffs. So 8 games on the course of the season, 7 of 9 head-to-head. And then in addition to that, there's the fact that the Thunder outperformed. If you look at their Pythagorean numbers, they were actually 4 games worse than what the team actually looked like in terms of all of their metrics. Now, they overachieved by 4 games because Westbrook was so historically, unbelievably great in close games, and he literally stole about 4 games, sounds right, that they had no business otherwise winning. But really, there was 8 games of separation between the Rockets and Thunder overall, and then 12 games if you look at the Pythagorean.
Yeah, so it's a pretty big difference. So even if you were to, and then the Warriors added, they upgraded where they needed to the most in terms of, you know, getting a second shot creator.
Yep.
And getting those 2 combo forwards. And while I like the players they traded, Decker and Harrell are, I think they have good futures, but they don't have good presence. Like right now, they're not as good as Tucker or Mute.
Right.
There's the Rockets, they upgraded 33% of their rotation, and quite significantly too. The Thunder, on the other hand, they were worse. And certainly, Paul George is a huge upgrade. I'm not going to try and argue that he's not better than Oladipo. The Anthony trade is probably a trade you have to make. But I'm not as convinced that it really helped the Thunder as much as some people are.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had to give up Cantor. And that really sold out a big part of their identity. That Adams then Cantor.
That rotation. Cantor's one of those guys. If you bring Cantor off the bench with his low post arsenal against the general quality of backup centers around the NBA, that was a real advantage for them. Those 15 minutes or so, Kanter's plus minus was pretty big time because we all know his defensive deficiencies. But for those 15 minutes a game, and it comes back to the same logic we said earlier about the Rockets having a Hall of Fame point guard out there for 48 minutes, that's a big advantage that the Thunder had last year that now they don't have.
Yeah, and so they upgraded, but they also gave up more than the Rockets did.
Yeah.
And so the net gain of the Thunder is less, is arguably less than the net gain the Rockets had. But
yeah,
even if you say if the Wash or if the Thunder were actually improved a little bit more, I don't see them improving a dozen games more than the Rockets did.
Or even eight. Yeah.
And the other thing about this that I was thinking after I wrote the article is, you know, about Pythagorean wins and Russ's clutch time performance. That was the main reason for that. Well, now you're going to have clutch time confusion for a while.
Mm. Yep.
As you have these three traditional alphas.
Yep.
Trying to figure out how to work it together, and it's, you know, Paul George, this is a guy that's never made a clutch shot, but was complaining in the NBA Finals. He's never made a game-winning shot.
Yep.
In the playoffs last year, he was complaining he didn't get the shot.
Yep.
So it's not like he's ready to just say, I don't want to take the shot.
Yep.
So some of those Pythagorean wins, the Thunder probably don't get this year. They might even finish a little below their Pythagorean win total.
Sure, because of that.
Versus the Rockets last year had some struggles because they were so predictable because Harden always had the ball in his hand. Well, now with Paul and Harden able to share it, and with their improved clutch defense, they're probably going to be a little bit better. So I think I really struggle to wrap my head around why people are so high on the Thunder and not as high on the Rockets. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. I think it's just generally sticker shock. It's one of those things. You just see certain names and you don't think through the actual value. It's just a matter of three stars versus two, even though, of course, when it comes to me and you as actual basketball guys, then you make a pretty compelling case that both Clint Capella and Eric Gordon, maybe even Trevor Ariza too, borderline, are going to be more valuable players this upcoming season than Carmelo Anthony. But at the same time, they don't have the shoe line, they don't have the notoriety over the past 10 years. So it's one of those things. It should be easy to understand, but if a lot of folks get kind of the shiny new, the bright and shiny object theory, I think is at play here. And then the other teams we didn't mention, but San Antonio just feels like they had a little bit of an underwhelming offseason, and Minnesota, certainly quality offseason, but I would assume your case would be the same as mine, that for Minnesota, while certainly they take a step forward, expecting them to get to that 55-plus win tier it would be a little bit too much too soon. Is that a fair characterization of those two teams?
Yeah. I actually have the Timberwolves finishing fifth and beating the Thunder in the first round of the
playoffs. Oh, wow. I like that.
One thing, because it was just so crazy, like the whole offseason. One thing I'm sort of interested in, and I think could be really exciting, that doesn't get a lot of discussion, is the Butler Towns pick and roll and the potential for things that they can do with that.
Mm-hmm.
That could be pretty devastating in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And the Timberwolves, the other end of that Pythagorean win thing.
Mm-hmm.
Was the Timberwolves were, I think, the worst team in terms of underperforming. And a lot of that had to do with they were the 29th or 30th worst team in the clutch last year.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Butler was the second best player in the clutch behind Westbrook. So I think they're going to actually have a big, huge jump.
Yeah.
I think they could win in the low 50s.
Okay.
So, yeah, they're going to be a fun team to watch.
Yeah, definitely. And the Spurs, I just assume it's a matter of not really, you know, certainly there's the Parker injury issue, but it's a matter of not really having any substantial acquisition. There's some uncertainty with Kawhi's health. You know, you can never count out the Spurs, but it just feels like that the talent base, at least to me, isn't there to really be a 60-plus win team. Is that kind of how you see it?
Yeah, and I'm worried about the loss of Dedmon.
Yeah.
He was really the anchor of that defense. And Pau Gasol just, man, he could put on some men's shoes and not even slow down. He's so slow.
Yeah.
Well, how do you slow down stock? I mean,
yeah.
he's just that contract was a weird one to me.
And then losing Jonathan Simmons as well. Simmons being a pretty big part of their matchups against the Rockets because of his ability to guard James Harden. So
yeah.
I think they're deep. Go ahead.
But Popovich is going to Popovich. You know,
yeah.
We've been counting out the Spurs every year for like the last 12, and they keep not being counted out. So.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good way to look at it. All right.
It's like, but you know, this one is especially if Kawhi. I was reading that Kawhi's hamstring injury started last year. Pop said it goes back to last year. That's concerning to me.
Yeah, that it actually goes back 3 years. I've heard. So yeah, it's one of those when you have the same injury that keeps popping up. Yeah, that's one to certainly keep an eye on. Anyway, Kelly, thank you so much for the time. Before we close off, any last plugs you want to do for any other articles, your Twitter, anything else as far as where Rockets fans can find you?
Well, just my top 100. I'm finishing that today.
There you go.
So, James Harden finished 5, by the way.
There you go. I think that's a much more reasonable than, that ESPN where he was at 8, which was just absolutely bizarre, but... What outlet is that for? Is that for FanRag, Bleacher?
Yeah, that's for FanRag.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I got number 2 and number 1 going up today. And then, it's got not just a list of players, but there's about a 600-800 word write-up on each one with scouting report and everything. So, kind of neat.
Gotcha. Sounds good. Well, Kelly, thank you so much for the time. Rockets fans, yeah, if you're not already following him, do so at Kelly Scaletta. Me, I'm at Ben Dubose on Twitter. The show is at Locked on Rockets. Also, don't forget to email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. If you've got questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better program. For now, though, I think on behalf of Kelly, I will sign off for us because, well, we're just a few hours away from game time. Rockets Warriors, 9:30 Tuesday evening, nationally televised on TNT. You get a first chance to look at how the Rockets and Warriors match up this season. One of only 3 matchups. Somehow the Rockets got a little bit of a break matching up with the Warriors 3 times instead of 4 times. But, yep, one of those is tonight in Oakland. So enjoy it, Rockets fans. Won't have an immediate post-game show afterward because, well, I think my wife would shoot me for trying to record a podcast at 1 or 2 a.m. But certainly tomorrow we'll have some Rockets-Warriors reaction along with Thursday, Rockets-Kings reaction, another late game on Wednesday. For now, though, on behalf of Kelly Scaletta, I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked on Rockets. As always, thanks to you guys for listening. And folks, enjoy the game tonight. We'll be talking again shortly thereafter.